to power.
I get that, گذشته.
If we look through history, Afghanistan has had many prominent, creative, and leading women in different arenas. But since we live under the Taliban rule, it looks like this chain is unfortunately being broken, with women being sidelined or disappearing from active social life. We will keep raising our voices and defend our rights. Neither Islam nor Afghan culture has barred women from getting an education or going to work.
Afghan women rights activists also call on the global community to take serious and practical steps for women rights in Afghanistan. They say that merely condemnations can't relieve their pain, but the international community needs to come forward to press the Taliban to change their stance and uphold the rights of women and girls. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Rights groups have condemned the death of a 6-year-old Palestinian boy, Farouk Abu Naja, who died last week in Gaza after Israel denied him an exit permit to travel to Al-Quds for urgent medical care. 4 patients, including 3 children, have died so far this year because of the inhumane Israeli practice. Getting an Israeli permit to access the health care needed outside the impoverished territory can be a stressful and unpredictable process.
Israel is fully responsible for the death of the child according to the 4th Geneva Convention. This case is yet another example of Israel's continuous violation of international humanitarian law and human rights law. Denying access to necessary medical care for a child is unwarranted and grave.
We met with the family of Farouk Abu Naja in the southern Gaza Strip, town of Khan Yunis.
When Farouk was born, he was a healthy child, but at the age of 3, he started showing signs of sickness and weakness. His health started to deteriorate, and he was diagnosed with cerebral atrophy. Doctors in Gaza referred him to a hospital in Al-Quds. We applied for an Israeli permit twice, but we were told that his care is under security review. Israel killed my son. Farouk died Wednesday night while waiting for the permit.
Over 1,000 Palestinian patients have lost their lives in the Gaza Strip since 2007. The large number of deaths highlights the lethal impact of Israel's crippling blockade on nearly 2 million Palestinians living in the coastal enclave.
The crippling Israeli blockade and the arbitrary restriction have battered the health sector in Gaza. Hospitals suffer from acute shortage of essential drugs and medical devices and insufficient number of specialized health professionals. Local hospitals are unable to treat many serious diseases, and so raising the number of patients referred for treatment abroad.
Hospitals in the Gaza Strip lack many essential drugs they need to treat patients suffering from severe illnesses. Under the current circumstances, the health condition of many patients is likely to further deteriorate.
The Israeli blockade has had a devastating impact on the health and the well-being of people in the Gaza Strip since 2007. Hundreds of Palestinian patients have already lost their lives in recent years in the besieged enclave due to the Israeli regime's inhumane practices. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
Over 16 months of on-and-off discussions over the revival of the JCPOA appear to be nearing an end, with Tehran reviewing the U.S. response to its amendments on a recent EU draft proposal aimed at reviving the accord. The negotiations started after U.S. President Joe Biden took power on a pledge to correct the mistakes of his predecessor, Donald Trump. That's the man who unilaterally abandoned JCPOA in 2018 and launched a so-called maximum pressure campaign against Tehran. President Ebrahim Raisi has now reiterated Iran's conditions for an agreement. They include the settlement of safeguards issues between Iran and the UN nuclear agency.
What have been raised are first assuring guarantees. Second, the verification of the sanctions removal in an objective and practical manner. Third, the removal of sanctions in a meaningful and sustainable way. And fourth, an end to what I call political accusations regarding safeguard issues.
Raisi argued that it's pointless to restore the deal without putting an end to those safeguards accusations. He was referring to the IAEA recently asking Iran to provide explanations for what it called traces of enriched uranium at some of its undeclared sites. Tehran says these are baseless accusations coming from Israel. In his presser, Raisi was asked to comment on Israel's recent threats that it won't be bound by a JCPOA revival agreement and it will do everything to prevent Iran from attaining a nuclear capability. The president said the regime can never hinder Iran's nuclear progress.
The Zionist regime's threats against Iran have led to nowhere. The assassination of Iran's nuclear scientists was meant to stop Iran's progress in the nuclear field, but we were not stopped. Many acts of sabotage and seditions were aimed at stopping us, but we were not stopped. And no measure by the Zionist regime and the arrogant powers will stop Iran from its right to obtain nuclear energy.
Deal or no deal, Iran appears set to resolve its sanctions problems once and for all. Raisi says Tehran pursues efforts to nullify the sanctions concurrent with its efforts to get the sanctions removed. He cited a huge boost in Iran's exports since his government was formed last year, pointing to a five-fold increase in Iran's trade with regional countries.
The final act of terror by the U.S. before ending its 20-year occupation of Afghanistan was targeting a civilian car with a missile and killing 10 members of a family last year. 2-year-old Somaya was the youngest and 6 other victims were under 18. 3 adults were also among the fatalities. This deadly strike took place by the U.S. forces amid their evacuation following the Taliban's return to power.
We heard a very terrifying sound. We were running like crazy to get there. We saw a car burning in fire. People were killed. There was a lot of smoke and people were screaming. The U.S. said there was ISIS in that house, but later they confessed they were all civilians.
So, were there others killed? Yes.
U.S. officials tried so hard not to utter the word civilians at first, but later they confessed that the strike was a mere mistake, taking the lives of 10 innocent people.
And acknowledge our mistakes.
The last memory from U.S. presence in Afghanistan is the drone strike that killed 7 children. During their presence, the Americans conducted thousands of similar operations, killing countless civilians. They use this attack to turn the media away from their shameful pullout. They do such actions by breaking legal and international standards. This was a war crime, and the perpetrators should have been tried.
According to the Bureau of Investigative Journalism, more than 900 civilians have been killed in the U.S. airstrike since 2015 in Afghanistan. And so far, no one has been held accountable. The drone strike that took the lives of 7 children and 3 adults showed once more that the victims of the U.S. missions are mostly innocent civilians. Abdullah Amirzadeh, Kabul.
This is IRIB English Radio. Website is www.parstoday.com/en.
The Supplication on Saturdays. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Bismillah, words that seekers of sanctuary repeatedly recite. Words that the very cautious in search of protection often repeat. I seek refuge with Allah, the Exalted above all, from the oppression of the unjust, from the deceitful malice the envious use to lay snares and traps, from the injustice and outrage of the tyrants, and I sing his praise. Do better and go beyond other praisers. O Allah, thou art one, has no partner, and is the Lord Master without being made. There is no discrepancy or nonsense in thy commands, nor there is lawlessness in thy kingdom. I beseech thee to send blessings on Muhammad, thy servant, thy messenger. To let me ask thee for enlightenment and inspiration, so as to be thankful for thy bounties, which alone get thy approval ultimately. To help me to obey thee and instinctively worship thee, and make me deserve thy rewards on account of thy very patronage. And have mercy on me, and prevent me from breaking in the bounds of thy prohibitions, as far as I am kept alive, and show the way unto that which is useful and advantageous till I go on survive. To let me take to heart the meanings of thy book, and by its reading, throw down the heavy burden of sins, and receive welfare and salvation as a gift. Let not my family and friends who love me leave me alone. Let thy favors reach me in abundance during the remainder of my life, exactly as they used to be made available for me in full in the days gone by. O the Most Merciful.
Bring us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
The United States has been accused of a huge covert pro-Western digital campaign targeting Middle East or West Asia. It was reported that dozens of social media accounts, which have been closed, as it's been reported at this point, operated for years in an attempt to influence people in the Middle East or West Asia and Asia. A new study believes the U.S. is behind it. In this edition of The Spotlight, we will ask why the U.S. deemed it so important to alter or to influence the opinions and thoughts of people in this region in particular, and what was their goal behind this. First, let me introduce our guest for this edition of The Spotlight. Assistant Professor of Middle East Studies at the University of Tehran, Arya Barzan Mohammadi, joins us. And also editor at Veterans Today, Kevin Barrett, who joins us from Madison.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Let me ask you a simple question here from you, Arya Barzari. When you come to understanding what this title means, of what the U.S. has been accused, can you break it down for us? Because maybe it could be a bit confusing to some. The accusation, a huge covert pro-Western digital campaign targeting Middle East and in part Asia, which includes Russia and China.
Sure. Actually, it's nothing new when you look at it from a historical perspective. I mean, the U.S. has been always involved in covert plans and missions, either by coups against various countries, you know, committing coups, inciting coups, or via media such as the Radio Free Europe during the Cold War, or even after that. What is new in this instance is the use or the abuse of social media. And what is even more interesting is that giant social media companies such as Twitter and Facebook decided to speak up and speak against the U.S. and U.K. government and play the role of whistleblowers. While for years we used to hear scandals that were Twitter and Facebook managers were involved in it, such as Cambridge Analytica, and also various scandalous programs that were accusing Twitter and Facebook companies of trying to manipulate information.
Why do you think they decided to speak up now? I mean, this thing was in operation for 5 years, and I can almost bet that it's still going on in one form or another, and even prior to 2012, because it cites the time period of 2012 to 5 years from that point on. So why speak now? Why would they target the U.S. in a sense now?
Well, at this point, we cannot say for sure. We can only speculate that they had enough of the government suppression, and they decided to fight back a little bit. And also, they were hugely harmed by the leaks and reports about how they abused people's trust on them and how they used the information that was supposed to be private and sold it to third parties. So I think they are trying to buy some legitimacy for themselves and try to recover some of the damage that was done previously to them and show to the outside world, show to the users that we are not that corrupt and we are reliable and trustworthy social media companies and we are independent, so to speak, from governments of U.S. and UK. But this is only, I think, I suppose, is the tip of iceberg that these two companies decided to reveal. And sure, the rest of it will stay hidden for years.
Well, I mean, Kevin Barrett, when you take a look at what was done, which I'd like for you to really expand on it for us, from what we understand, there were memes, petitions, fake news, AI-altered profile photos, propaganda, hashtags, and all sorts of things that had to be superficially made up, and that's what the U.S. has been accused of. Tell us the expanding role that the U.S. has been accused of in this particular instance, which focused on influencing people in the Middle East or West Asia, and not to mention Russia and China also.
Well, yeah, the U.S. has worked through these social media companies and through the internet, which was created in the U.S. by DARPA. Let's remember that DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, actually came up with the internet, and it was originally designed as a way to avoid any kind of blockage or breakdown in the event of nuclear war. So it was a command and control and communication system, three C's, that was meant to survive nuclear war and be used by the American military intelligence community. That's what the internet originally was. And so they founded it. They got the infrastructure and built the infrastructure to their advantage. And they've been in control of it disproportionately, at least ever since. Now, it's a little bit like the MKUltra program and LSD. And you may recall that the CIA developed LSD and along with a long list of other drugs that it was using to try to brainwash people. And then the hippies got hold of it, and pretty soon they were sort of deprogramming people from the CIA mentality. So here, the internet, of course, has become a tool that anybody can use to a certain extent. But the people who built that infrastructure are still in a position to use it more powerfully than others. And so I guess these revelations, which I haven't really had a chance to investigate carefully, would indicate that what's come out is stuff that we kind of already very much suspected, which is that the social media companies are very much part of the U.S. military intelligence community. Google is widely known to be essentially a branch of the CIA. Google Alphabet has been involved in some of the ugliest CIA criminal black ops, including biological weapons in Tbilisi, Georgia, smuggling the chemical weapons into Syria for use in false flags blamed falsely on Bashar al-Assad, and all sorts of things. So Google is the CIA. Facebook is the CIA plus Israel. Mark Zuckerberg is a Zionist who consults with Bibi Netanyahu. And so what these people do is that they use these outfits, the social media, to spin reality in the direction that their leadership wants them to. And they've been doing this to the entire planet. They're doing it to the West, and they're doing it to the Middle East and the Islamic world.
Well, they have done it to West Asia or Middle East, as it's called, to the extent where 40% of the focus was the area of the Middle East or West Asia, and in particular, Iran was their focus. So, Mr. Mohammadi, why do you think the U.S. has such a keen interest in trying to influence and shape thoughts and stances towards Iran through social media? Why this intensity behind that?
Well, it's not a secret that the U.S. Governments, since at least Ronald Reagan, were trying to topple the Iranian system, the Iranian, and also they were working against the Iranian revolution. So what they are doing is exactly trying to brainwash people, which they are not and will not be successful in that. But they might be successful in creating small echo chambers where people who are pro-West and anti-government in Iran or China or Russia might become under the illusion that the majority of people think like them. And the social media is very capable of doing that. And it is addictive. You know, when thousands of fake accounts like your tweet or your Instagram post and give you this wrong impression that, you know, being against, working against your country is a good thing and it's a noble thing according to the Western standards, then you people, which are very small percentage of the population, might be brainwashed into doing more vulgar things. And they are, I think that they are banking on that. They are, I'm sure, more wise than, you know, to think that they are capable of toppling the government or the system in Iran, Russia, or China by thousands or even millions of fake accounts. The time that such techniques could work, for example, during the Arab uprising is long past, and people in Middle East, China, and Russia are wiser than that, and they don't get fooled twice by the same tricksters.
Okay, we're going to get to some of the things that are fake and not when it comes to Iran, and Kevin Barrett, when it comes to Russia, it actually was cited as being one of the most active campaigns in which the Russian-speaking internet users in Central Asia were targeted, and they focused on criticizing Russia over the civilian deaths, according to the way they saw it, and other atrocities when it came to the Ukraine conflict. Isn't that a way for the U.S. and these fake accounts and what have you wanting to convince people who may doubt what is going on in the Ukraine conflict to accuse Russia rather than, in a sense, then overshadowing what Ukraine is actually doing, because Ukraine also is responsible for some of the deaths, and in the bigger picture, to convince that target that this military operation that Russia is conducting is not a good thing?
The Western mind control machine has actually done pretty well in this war on Russia through Ukraine, which is what it is. This is a Western war of aggression on Russia. But the global consciousness of that is pretty mixed because the Western oligarchs own a disproportionate share of the global media. So they are using all sorts of means, including the creation and maintenance of huge numbers of fake social media accounts, spam bots, and so on, to try to make people think that essentially the whole world sides with them against Russia, which of course isn't true. The world largely has sided with Russia. The vast majority of the world has refused to go along with the sanctions. And this propaganda blaming Russia for atrocities in Ukraine is actually quite shameful, because the way the U.S. has fought its wars has been to make no effort whatsoever to spare civilian populations, but on the contrary, to deliberately target civilian populations. When the U.S. went into the former Yugoslavia, and then when it went into Iraq, and of course its actions elsewhere in Afghanistan and so on, always involve attacking civilian infrastructure, making life miserable for civilians. They killed perhaps 500,000 plus Iraqi children, as Madeleine Albright admitted, during the 1990s, due to the destruction of Iraqi infrastructure, leading the children to be drinking polluted water and so on. So the Americans deliberately target civilians.
Well, let me ask you this, Kevin Barrett.
Since
you're mentioning Iraq, isn't that one of the things that the U.S. has realized its mistake, in a sense? And that is why West Asia or the Middle East is focused, because many here in this region doubt very highly the intentions that the U.S. has overall when it comes to the way that it exercises its foreign policy, given the fact that they have firsthand accounts of what happened in Iraq.
Well, yeah, the U.S. is behind the eight ball in propagandizing West Asia. And so it is, of course, trying to claim that Russia is committing all these terrible human rights violations in Ukraine, when the reality of the situation is that if Russia had chosen to wage its war on Ukraine the way the U.S. waged its war on Ukraine, you would have huge numbers of Ukrainian casualties. They would have leveled much of Kiev, which Russia could do any moment that it wants. But Russia is taking this very slow, methodical approach, minimizing its own casualties and minimizing Ukrainian civilian casualties. And in the areas they're fighting, most of the people identify as Russian and speak Russian and are on the side of the Russians. So it's obvious why they're doing that. But that's the truth. And unfortunately, the media, and including social media, as we're seeing, is dominated by these Anglo-Zionist oligarchs who basically lie about everything. You know, Putin may not always tell the truth, but he usually does. Sure. And when he said that the West is the empire of lies, that was the truth.
Well, I was going to ask you now, Mr. Mohammadi, as I alluded to before, some of the fake news that has been propagated by the U.S. as a whole, and of course through probably some of these accounts that for the period of 5 years targeted Iran. And I'd like to ask you about those and see what you think, such as the lie that the U.S. has spread about Iran being a leading state sponsor of terrorism. We could counter that in a sense, and I'd like to get your reaction of how the truth on that is that the war on terror was conducted against groups like Al-Qaeda, Daesh, or Al-Shabaab, none of which are backed by Iran. So that's one of the falsities that the U.S. has premised when it comes to spreading the lie of the Iran being a leading state sponsor of terrorism. Do you agree with that? And what other instances of fake news on Iran do you think is being spread online, even to this day perhaps, by the U.S. through online fake accounts.
I totally agree with you. And to add to that, if you look at the region, Iran was the only country for years to support Syria against terrorist groups such as ISIS and Jabhat al-Nusra. And even in Iraq, Iran was there to defend Erbil even before the Kurdish region's usual allies in the West. So of course it is a propaganda, and of course Iran is a victim of terrorism. The latest one was the coward act by the U.S. of assassinating General Martyr Qasem Soleimani. So if we look at the record of the countries and not at the propaganda, it is clear which state is committing terror and which state is fighting terror. We were fighting ISIS in Iraq, in Syria, and we were fighting terrorism inside our country for years as well, and still are fighting terrorism. But propaganda machine is getting more and more sophisticated, especially with the advent of social media. And if we use the term coined by French philosopher Baudrillard, the hyper real or hyper reality that is created inside this virtual medias and virtual space, sometimes it doesn't refer to the outside reality at all, and it does not need to. So those signifiers don't refer to a signified in the real world. Uh-huh. They are signifiers that refer to the other signifiers, to use the philosophical terms. So it's all in their minds and in the minds of people who are manipulated by these manipulating machines, which are social media, and they have very, very sophisticated algorithms that follow your likes and dislikes and the patterns of your behavior, I mean people's behavior, in order to brainwash them. How much they are successful in that, it needs to be analyzed.
Well, this particular study actually said that some of these, overall, Kevin Barrett, they were not that successful. Actually, they were not able to sway the audience to the intended goals that they had. So why do you think that is? Because that, in a sense, and my question to you is, doesn't that show that the audience out there, the viewers out there, are much smarter now, more informed, especially when it comes to the propaganda leveled against countries like Iran, perhaps, and even Russia and China?
I think that's true. Yes, I think that it's, especially the West Asia region has traditionally been a very difficult audience for Western propaganda. There's this term, the Arab street, that, of course, has been used by the Zionist oligarchs that own Western media and the people in the government, who are really annoyed that ordinary people in the Arab world and the rest of West Asia don't seem to go along with the Western narrative on all sorts of things.
Okay.
And it drives them crazy. And sure. I guess that's continuing now as the social media manipulation is probably cultural factors. It's probably harder for them to figure out what motivates an individual in West Asia than it is for them to figure out what motivates an individual in, say, the United States. They probably just don't have enough sort of psyops expertise.
Well, thank you for that. I'm sorry to jump in. We're fresh out of time. Let me thank our guests, Assistant Professor of Middle East Studies at the University of Tehran, Arya Barzan Mohammadi, and editor at Veterans Today, Kevin Barrett. Thank you both for your input. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikhail Vitafoy and the team, it's goodbye. Until next time.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
ولقد يسرنا القرآن.
path towards enlightenment.
In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful, Salam and welcome to another episode of our weekly series titled Path Towards Enlightenment, which is an endeavor to make you and us familiar with an easy and fluent explanation of God's final scripture to all mankind, the Noble Quran, that was revealed to the last and greatest of all messengers, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Today, we complete our explanation of Surah Hadid, which is number 57 in the serial order of compilation of the Noble Quran, and mentions the heavy metallic element called Hadid or iron as being sent down by God to endow the earth itself with mighty force and provide humanity with the many benefits of its structural strength, as well as all the great tests of faith that arise from this. As we said in our previous episodes, Surah Hadid presents several divine attributes, then proceeds with the grandeur of the Noble Quran, the state of believers and hypocrites on the Day of Resurrection, accounts of the past nations, and spending in the way of Allah for establishment of social justice. It criticizes monasticism and social seclusion, and mentions the response received from the public by the previous prophets. We continue from where we left you a fortnight ago, and here is Ayah 25.
لقد أرسلنا رسلنا بالبينات وأنزلنا معهم الكتاب والميزان ليقوم الناس بالقسط وأنزلنا الحديد فيه بأس شديد وَأَنزَلْنَا الْحَدِيدَ فِيهِ بَأْسٌ شَدِيدٌ وَمَنَافِعُ لِلنَّاسِ وَلِيَعْلَمَ اللَّهُ مَنْ يَنْصُرُهُ وَرُسُلَهُ بِالْغَيْبِ إِنَّ اللَّهَ قَوِيٌّ عَزِيزٌ.
Certainly we sent our prophets with manifest proofs, and we sent down with them the book and the balance, so that mankind may maintain justice. And we sent down iron, in which there is a great might and uses for mankind, and for so that Allah may know those who help him and his prophets in their absence. Indeed, Allah is all strong, almighty. If you remember, in our explanation of the previous ayahs of this surah, in our last episode, we said, if the life of the world is amusements and pleasures of the flesh for the sinners and disbelievers, it is an excellent opportunity for obeying God's commandments and abstaining from forbidden acts and things for the believers who strive for divine mercy and forgiveness. We also said that a faithless person is dejected when misfortune befalls and exults in wild joy when fortune favors him or her, while a true believer is patient in calamities and is thankful to God for whatever is gained. Allah, the All-Merciful, who tests the degrees of faith or the lack of it through both disasters and bounties, averts many a calamity, whether accidental or natural, such as storms, earthquakes,
epidemics, and the like, because of earnest prayers and supplications to him. The ayah that we recited to you now means to say that striving toward divine mercy, forgiveness, and paradise requires the leadership of divinely designated leaders, that is, the prophets and imams. All prophets were granted clear evidences of their mission, and God raised prophets in every nation with a book that determines right from wrong, in order to promote the concept of justice among mankind. Thus, the three aspects of divine sovereignty that could be drawn from this ayah are legislative, judicial, and executive, by means of the heavenly scripture, the scale or the balance to maintain justice, and the iron, which indicates power and progress. No revealed book is without a perfect balance. In other words, the relation of the balance to the book is that the scale to the map. The scriptures represent the map of divine knowledge in revealed form, and no map can be of any use without a precise scale or balance in society through the presence of an infallible person. Iron, for its part, stands for strength, power, discipline, and implementation of law and order. It is also one of the sources of industrial development, in addition to wielding political and economic power. Helping God undoubtedly reflects support for religion and the prophets through propagation of truth, equity, and justice in society, although the Almighty Creator is not in need of anyone, but all beings are in need of him. This ayah teaches us that, 1, prophets do not force people to accept the truth and abstain from vices, but they explain to them in the most rational manner the depth of guidance towards paradise and the wicked ways that end up in the fires of hell. 2, maintenance of justice in society is among the principal goals of the mission of the prophets. 3, law and order at times require the use of power on the basis of the revealed book and the balance to discern right from wrong in order to discipline the wayward. 4, iron is the symbol of power and progress of human societies with its many benefits. Now let us listen to ayahs 26 and 27 of the same surah.
وَلَقَدْ أَرْسَلْنَا نُوحًا وَإِبْرَاهِيمَ وَجَعَلْنَا فِي ذُرِّيَّتِهِمَا النُّبُوَّةَ وَالْكِتَابَ فَمِنْهُمْ مُهْتَدٍ وَكَثِيرٌ مِنْهُمْ فَاسِقُونَ ثم قفينا على آثارهم برسلنا وقفينا بعيسى بن مريم وآتيناه الإنجيل وجعلنا في قلوب الذين اتبعوه رأفة ورحمة ورهبانية ابتدعوها ما كتبناها عليهم إلا ابتغاء رضوان الله فما رعوها حق رعايتها فآتينا الذين آمنوا منهم أجرهم وَكَثِيرٌ مِّنْهُمْ فَاسِقُونَ
And we certainly sent Noah and Abraham, and we ordained among their descendants prophethood and the book. Some of them, the people, are rightly guided, and many of them are transgressors. Then we followed them up with our other prophets, and we followed them with Jesus, son of Mary. And we gave him the evangel, and we put in the hearts of those who followed him kindness and mercy. As for monasticism, they innovated it themselves. We had not prescribed it for them and commanded them to only seek Allah's pleasure. Yet they did not observe it with due observance. So we gave to the faithful among them their due reward, while many of them are transgressors. These ayahs make it clear that prophets were designated by God Almighty and not elected or selected by mankind. Ayah 26 mentions two of the great prophets, that is Noah and Abraham, among whose descendants other prophets were raised and given the scriptures. But except for a few, many people fail to benefit from guidance and the divine bounties by falling to the temptations of the ever-deceiving Satan. Ayah 27 refers to the mission of Prophet Jesus, the miraculously born son of the Virgin Mary, who was given the evangel, and disciples whose hearts were filled by God with mercy and kindness. The next part of the ayah admonishes those who claim to follow Jesus but indulge in such unnatural practices like monasticism and celibacy, when God did not command such inhuman behavior, and in order to enable them to achieve his satisfaction, he only advised virtue and abstention from vices, which they failed to properly observe. Thus, God Almighty rewarded those who were the true followers of Jesus, while the rest were deprived of divine mercy for their sins and disobedience. From these ayahs, we learn that, number one, the mission of the prophets is to convey divine commandments for the guidance of mankind. Number two, an unbroken chain of prophets exists from the father of the human race, Adam, till the greatest of them, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, while after him are his 12 infallible heirs, the last of whom, Imam Mahdi, peace upon him, is in occultation and will rise in the end times to establish the global government of peace, prosperity, and justice. Number three. Jesus was a human being and not God's son as alleged, which means those who deviate from divine commandments and do not follow the fundamentals of faith are transgressors. And number four, innovation including celibacy in the name of religion is against the letter and spirit of the revealed faith and a clear disobedience of God's instructions. In conclusion of this week's episode of Path Towards Enlightenment, which also marks the end of Surah Hadid, here are ayahs 28 and 29.
Ya ayyuhalladhina amanu ittaqullaha wa aminu bi rasulihi وآمنوا برسوله يؤتكم كفلين من رحمته ويجعل لكم نورا تمشون به ويغفر لكم والله غفور رحيم لئلا يعلم أهل الكتاب ألا يقدرون على شيء من فضل الله وأن الفضل بيد الله يؤتيه من يشاء والله ذو الفضل العظيم.
Oh, you who have faith, be wary of Allah and have faith in His Prophet. He will grant you a double share of His mercy and give you a light to walk by and forgive you. And Allah is all-forgiving, all-merciful. So that the people of the book may know that they have no power over anything of Allah's grace, and that all grace is in Allah's hand, which He grants to whomever He wishes, and Allah is dispenser of a great grace. Here God tells the believers to firmly believe in His last and greatest prophet, so that they may be given a double share of divine mercy for being steadfast on the path of Islam with faith in the prophets of the past as well. In such a case, their repentance for the misdeeds of the past will be accepted, and they will be granted by the all-forgiving and all-merciful Lord the ability to discern truth from falsehood through the light of faith, which is a reference to the infallible Imam. The last ayah is an admonition to the followers of the earlier revealed scriptures who think of themselves to be believers to know that they have no power over God's grace and bounties, which are granted to the true believers who have faith in all that the Almighty Creator has revealed, culminating in the universal mission of Islam, entrusted to Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, who in turn specified his 12 divinely designated successors. These ayahs teach us the following points. Number one, we should firm up our faith through observance of God-wariness. That includes all that the Almighty Creator has commanded. Number two, a believer is liable to commit sins, but if he or she sincerely repents, will be forgiven by God, the All-Merciful. Number three, we should not judge about the fate of others in the hereafter, as God's grace is very vast and is not restricted to our limited knowledge of acts and intentions of God. Well, dear listeners, on that note, we have come to the end of Surah Hadid, and in the next episode, we will take up explanation of the next surah, that is Mujadele. God bless you and goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.